Welcome to the first podcast ever, 691.
June 30th.
You know, that's the
premiere of
season 2 of The Meltdown with Jonathan Mayo.
Wait a minute!
Yes.
I've heard of this show.
You were on it last season and you did fantastic. One of my favorite gifts to come out of the season. You doing the dick dance.
Oh, I was so happy about that.
Yeah.
Meltdown's, people should, not just because you're here and you're a part of this and you do that show. It is a fantastic comedy show because it's all the interplay. Like, you guys weave all of the backstage interplay so well
that
there's a really great narrative that's happening while the set is happening, and it really makes you feel like that's what being at a show like that feels like, especially if you're a comic and you're backstage. You're fucking around about, wait, we gotta go watch this guy, and then you watch for a second, then you go back and you riff some more, and then you go back and watch.
It's pretty good at mimicking that feeling of goofing off with your friends backstage and then watching some of a show, and it's not, you know, none of it, neither of the two take away from the other.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't remember the first episode. Might have Abby and Alana from Broad City, I believe, in it, and Hampton Young. This season is really good. I'm really proud of the season. I'm really
sorry. And you know what?
I was very proud of last season.
I talked to Camille and Emily. They agree with you.
Yeah. No, it's very good. And I think because they do most of the work on it, they won't feel like doing a third season. So just fucking watch this season. Some of us don't have multiple shows and deals. Please.
Yeah, we do.
It's June 30th, and also on the Comedy Central app, which is a fantastic app. You don't have to have a cable provider or a TV provider at all. You can watch all 8 episodes of season 1 on the Comedy Central app. It's in front of the firewall.
Millennials.
Yes, for you millennials out there, download
it. The app is actually very good.
Yeah, I like it.
Very good. It's easy. NCC.com. But also, we're doing, I believe we added a second show at the Balboa Theater, San Diego Comic Con. Our first show is Sir Ben Kingsley, and there's a second guest that is
circling,
and then we should know who the guests are for the second show very soon too.
Sweet.
So that'll be
pretty fun to be down there.
I look forward to it. If anyone wants to let me sleep on their floor, whatever, just let me know.
More on that later.
Our guest is us this episode.
It's a hostful episode.
Yeah, just like a hostful intro.
Oh.
See?
Nice.
What a treat for all the people listening right now.
Told you we would do these.
Yeah. Got some in the calendar lined up.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious, are we taking time away from the hostful if we're doing a hostful intro? Because it's still us.
We have an agenda.
It's like a mega intro.
In the intro, there's an agenda. We have to introduce what's going on. We got to do sponsor stuff. We got to do the community corkboard.
Yo, but the corkboard was Meltdown this time.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that's
all it was.
Oh, well, okay. Also, watch the Doogie Howser MD Rebooted on Nerdist.com.
Yes, that was great.
Thank you.
Yes. I meant to send it to Neil yesterday. Yesterday was Neil Harris's birthday.
Oh.
And I meant to tweet that over to him. I guess the moment's passed now.
You can do a belated birthday thing.
No, I missed the moment.
As long as you just tag me. You know what? I'll do the tweet, then you retweet it and tag him in it.
But then it just feels like it's not genuine.
Excuse me, this is Walls Magazine. Are you guys talking about digital media?
Tacoma, live one.
Oh, also, I did a really great podcast called...
This is Tacoma? I'm sorry.
Everything's Coming Up podcast. Ali Gertz and Julia Prescott have a Simpsons podcast where they have a guest come on and talk about their favorite episode of The Simpsons. I just did the one episode that I just did that's out now. It's about A Star Is Burns.
Yes.
Festival's critic crossover episode.
Oh, what's my favorite? My favorite episode might be the Fighting Hellfish episode.
You should get on it. It's a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, you should definitely do it.
Yeah.
There's a cup. What do you think is going to happen with The Simpsons now without...
Sheer?
I think speculations are turning to just they're going to wrap it up.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to end the show?
Yeah.
Or do you think they're going to, in the last minute, like, pull him in?
I think even if he comes back, they're going to wrap it up.
But they just picked it up for, like, 2 more seasons, didn't they?
Yeah.
But you think they're just going to say, never mind.
No. I think maybe 1 season, and then maybe they'll get into movies again. It's like a couple interviews with Al Jean. He's mentioned the fact that, like, it's like, I wish we could have made a movie while not also making the show. When we make other movies, or if we make other movies, we're going to do it.
I think that Simpsons movie on July 11th, Stonecutters LA, is showing the Simpsons movie as part of our trivia show at Meltdown Comics.
Hey.
I think they should take one season and just do, like, a narrative House of Cards kind of an arc. Just
that'd
like one, like one weird dramatic arc season.
That'd be really cool.
Maybe I mean, they did what they're doing with their separation this year.
Maybe.
Yeah, that'd be pretty neat.
All right, I guess let's just start the actual Hostful now, so the transition will be fairly seamless.
Yeah,
and
fairly.
All right, when you start the intro part. And then here's us. Now entering nerdist.com. Remix.
Yeah, it's your favorite era.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Pratt. What was the thing you just posted on Instagram? What was the what's the Kurt Cobain thing?
It's another one you got to see now, Chris.
Another one?
Yeah. It's available on, you rent it off of Vimeo, which is interesting. And it's called Soaked in Bleach, and it's all about, it's got a little loose, changey vibe to it.
Okay.
Where it's all about the private investigator that Courtney hired and his perspective on the case of the death of Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
Specifically, not about his life, but specifically about all the events that happened surrounding his death and how bonkers everything is.
Because the other one that you watched, which
Montage of Heck.
Right? I watched, I saw a piece of it. And then I sent you the article from the guy that he was friends with.
Oh, yeah, King Buzzo from the Melvins.
Yes, who said, well, that was all bullshit, and Kurt just liked to fuck with people, and he never had stomach problems, and he hated Courtney's suspect and all this.
Which, like, Bobcat also mirrors with a lot of that stuff. Bobcat
really?
Goldthwait, who, you know, spent a lot of time with them opening up for Nirvana, like, said, like, you know, he'd be hanging out and he'd be goofing off, and then someone would come in to the dressing room or wherever they were hanging out, and they would need something from Kurt or want Kurt's attention, and Kurt would just kind of slump down and kind of like become the junkie guy, and then the guy would leave and he'd perk back up and start keep goofing off.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, he just didn't like he was shy, and he, like, that was his defense mechanism, I believe.
Wow, okay, yeah. So Soaked in Bleach on Vimeo, we should watch that.
It's just so, like, it's, I mean, there's great reenactments. Also, the guy, the private investigator that was hired, he, like, after his first meeting with Courtney Love, he was like, this is a bit silly, this lady. So he's like, he just started recording every conversation and every, like, interaction. There's, like, and so, like, a lot of the reenactments are, like, actual, like, and the reenactments are beautifully shot, but there's, like, a lot of, like, you know, like, it's to the actual recordings that he
Oh,
had.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah. And, like, it's, like, you know, a lot of stuff where he's going with, like, one of their junkie friends, like, is like, that's like, she's like, go to the house and get the shotgun, and, like, you know, going around the house looking for a shotgun, and then, like, it's just all this crazy stuff that just but what me and Kyle were talking about, it's like, but I don't think she's that together and smart enough to really pull off the thing that they're trying to say she pulled off.
And is that all? Do they sort of leave it open to the viewer? Like, here's a bunch of information, you decide.
Pretty much, but it does that. But it leans hard on Courtney and Callie, you know, Callie DeWitt, the nanny, the junkie nanny that was living in the house at the time. Okay.
What about Joyce DeWitt?
Not Joyce DeWitt.
She didn't do it? She had nothing to do with it?
The company had nothing to do with this.
She has a great alibi.
Okay.
She has a great alibi.
Okay, well, I'm just starting to rethink everything that I really thought, you know.
Yeah.
So Joyce DeWitt had nothing to do with Nirvana.
Nothing to do with it.
I mean, that's what you think, but there's a new movie that just came out,
yeah.
Yep.
It's called Four's Company.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just about the shotgun.
From the Jesus Christ. Why sent you the email today? Because now there's speculation, like, is Damian Lewis going to be the next James Bond? And you said Daniel Craig still has two movies left. He's not.
Yeah, they wouldn't start looking now. because why would you, and with Pierce Brosnan, yeah, start looking, because the movies, let's be honest, weren't great, and they weren't doing great at the box office. I mean, they were doing well at the box, but not.
They're doing better on Nintendo 64.
They're doing better on N64, brah. And then Skyfall made $1 billion. It's the highest grossing James Bond movie ever. So I don't think they would ever. They wouldn't willingly leave Daniel Craig unless Daniel Craig wants to.
You like the trailer for the new one?
Oh yeah, love
Spectre.
It. Yeah, check out the latest James Bonding. Hear Matt Gourley and I's thoughts on that trailer. We like to.
Did you do the whole podcast on the trailer?
No, we did the podcast before that. We did the entire podcast about the 11 and a half minute press conference where they brought up the cast, which is fucking insane. Anyway,
it did. Why?
That we would that we managed.
Oh, I thought you meant the press conference itself.
No, the press conference wasn't insane.
Okay,
the two dum-dums recording a podcast, that was insane that we were able to. Just keep talking about.
I think it's nice that you're passionate about it. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Yeah. I was at I performed at Bonnaroo this past weekend.
Who did you see?
I saw Ben Folds.
Yes,
who was great. He played with this this chamber orchestra group.
Nice.
And
they play like
called, I think it's called Y Music. What?
Oh, Y Music. Yeah. He talked about that group.
And then I saw Tears for Fears. From start to finish, and they were fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Really good.
And the thing that's great about it is I think that some people may have had a preconceived notion like, oh, it's just going to be like, you know.
Nostalgia act.
But they were so solid. And I, they were on the same plane I was on flying out to Bonnaroo, and I so wanted to say hi to them, but I was really scared.
You
and
let
so,
them on your jet?
I didn't. It's not. Matt.
Damn it! you weren't. On
I don't
jet.
Have a jet.
I don't know why. Why
it
would you fumble
like
around
you
that so much? What is wrong with you?
You make it seem like
no
you
one actually
just crumble
thinks
every time.
You know, have a jet.
You know what made me feel? I just felt bad because last night at midnight we did a game called Game of Thrones, which is all about ridiculous toilets. And yeah. I said, you know, I shouldn't have money because I spent $7,000 to buy a robotic toilet, like buy a robot toilet.
Yeah.
And then I got some tweets. People were like, "Hey, pretty relatable." And I was like, "But I'm sorry. I just, you know, you anyway. I mean,
no, it was fun. We would when I was writing it at midnight. I used to try to write that kind of thing in, but as the character of Chris Hardwick.
Yes, exactly,
you know I mean?
Exactly. But also, I think you know, it's fun to have a robot toilet. But anyway.
Quick, who gives a shit about being relatable? You're doing what you want to do.
No, I know, but I don't want, you know, I don't know.
Billionaires find it relatable.
Let me field Jonah's question. Chris gives a shit if he's relatable.
Yeah.
No, it's not. That's not. I mean, I guess that's partially true. As a comedian, you want to be relatable because that's part of your job. But also.
Like Seinfeld, so relatable now.
You know, you don't want to. And I'm not saying that I'm even in the same economic stratum as this person, but it's sort of like, you know, like the Goop, like Gwyneth Paltrow. It's like, I'm sure, you know, for her being like, well, if you just have two trainers come over to your house and make all of your food organic, and you're like, how are we supposed to do that? Yeah. You know, like, and in her mind, like, that makes perfect sense.
Because she's at another spot. She's at a place where, like, there's people that are rich that are reading her thing and going, like, I should have trainers come over.
But I was so...
I would have chefs come over.
Too nervous to say hi to Tears for Fears on the plane, so I tweeted, I'm too nervous to say hi to Tears for Fears. And then 2 minutes later, Kurt Smith got up out of his seat and came over, and he was like, hi, I just saw that you tweeted. I know who you are, and
all sprung for Wi-Fi?
We all sprung for Wi-Fi and spent the entire Kurt and Roland... And just tweeting back and forth to each other and making dumb jokes.
Regular,
and they were
regular Patton and Marin. You guys
they
are.
Were fucking.
Is that what they do?
They kind of had a thing.
They had a thing.
Yeah, they
it was a couple years ago.
Yeah, they had a thing a couple years ago, which I equated to sort of it sort of seemed a little bit like. Like when you're wrestling with your friend and all of a sudden someone gets a little hurt and then all of a sudden it gets a little serious and then all of a sudden you're, you know.
Start really punching.
But they were, they sounded so good.
Right.
And it was, and they covered Creep, which they did really great, which I know they do sometimes. But
nice.
But if you ever get the chance to see Tears for Fears, would highly recommend that you see Tears
That's
for
Fears. That's great. No, I'd love that. They're a band that I would like to see.
You know, there's that ilk that had a really good set a couple years ago. The Coachella set for Duran Duran was actually really fantastic.
Well, they still play pretty regularly.
But what's great with a band that is that people come in and there are so many songs that are so ingrained in their into their lives, and so when the band comes out and they're really still playing with passion and sounding great, and so people, because if they just played the songs like half-assed, people would still be like, hey, I love these. But to still play at the level that they've always played at and still make the song sound fresh but recognizable, the energy in this giant tent was fucking amazing. But
that's right.
Bonnaroo, very well-run comedy festival. I mean, very well-run music festival. The comedy tent is in a big top.
Yeah.
The audiences are great. Hot as fuck in Tennessee this time of year.
I bet.
Which, with Bonnaroo, is essentially on a farm, and there's all these kind of like shanty towns that spring up, like these tent towns.
Isn't it like Jack Johnson's festival?
Is it? No, I don't think so. No, it's the same people who run Outside Lands run Bonnaroo.
Sorry, Outside Lands.
But the idea, because it goes all night. I mean, like the music plays probably until 3 or 4 in the morning. But
oh, wow.
I think but it's like a 24-hour. Like there's always shit going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And but the idea of like it almost made me sick to my stomach to think that there are people who are doing drugs all day, drinking all night, probably going to sleep at like 6 or 7 in the morning, still drunk and fucked up. And then about 9 a.m. in their not air-conditioned tent, just the searing heat starts toasting them. And then they're sort of waking up kind of half. Like they were on the flight back, there were smells on the flight back that were just like cooked, fermented human drunkenness.
That's the way to do it, though. You get in your little hot box of a tent, you sweat out all the drugs and booze.
Wouldn't that wouldn't that dehydrate you more?
I think not only does it dehydrate you more, but I'm just surprised people didn't just burst into flames. Yeah.
we got another one!
Yeah.
But it was really fun.
Any other bands you saw?
No, not really, because it was so hot during the day.
They just did other stuff.
That
was Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel was good. Of course, went to Cracker Barrel in Murfreesboro. And then and Zach Galifianakis showed up. Zach and John Hamm showed up, and Zach did he wanted to go up during, and so I was like, please take all the time you want. He's like, I just want to do 10 minutes. So he did 10 minutes, and then Hamm came out and did a bit with him.
The Gummy Bears bit. Sebastian stole that bit from you.
They what?
No, like later on that night.
Oh, right.
They came out for Bell and Sebastian.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, so
What?
They're probably practicing.
I was the workshop show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I'm fine with.
Yeah, it was a beta test.
Yeah. But it was, but all in all, it was a really fun, really great festival. And,
cool.
And if you ever have a chance, you should go.
I've always wanted to.
You know, it's nice because it's a big festival.
They sell
festival.
Tickets, Jonah.
What?
They sell tickets to that.
Yeah, right. Like a normie?
It's a big festival, but it doesn't feel, overwhelming. Like the grounds are vast enough.
Yeah.
That there's room to breathe and move around, but it is oppressively hot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you're gonna,
I'm hoping to go back to Fun Fest this year
in Austin, Texas,
because it's the perfect time in Austin. It's November,
yeah,
so it's nice out. It's just perfect out, and it's the lineup this year is insane.
They got that at Waterloo Park.
Yeah,
can
right
you
there?
Come on that park?
Yeah, you can come on the park. With,
you come on that park if you want to come on that park.
I got a taco cannon that I shot last year. It was great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You shoot tacos at people?
Yeah, there's this huge like air-powered taco cannon that's just like a big revolver, and they get those soft tacos, put them in tin foil, then wrap them in like a bandana, and then they put them in this thing, and then you just like push down the button and it just goes goof, 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 and there's just people just fucking.
You're not murdering people with taco bombs?
No, you do it at enough of an arc that it just goes out far and it's just like people catching tacos.
What if you're feeling a little dark and you just aim it down?
I just aim it right down to the back of the
taco
security guard.
You put a taco-sized hole in someone's breastplate.
That'd be a fun medical examiner's report.
Yeah, yeah. It was the chorizo that killed him.
Taco cannon!
A great
is that
time.
What you yell out before you shoot it?
I was so nervous.
Did they do some air horn
I was so
situations?
Nervous about like doing it right because it's this gigantic thing they wheel out and then they count it down and then you just hold down this thing and there's all these rules they give to you right before you start. They're like, all right, hold it down, but only for like 5 seconds at a time. If you do any more than that, the compression will like it's just.
Is it from like? Are you from a stage?
Yeah, you go on a stage and do it.
Okay.
I think I did it right before. I think it was right before Dinosaur Jr. So technically I opened up for Dinosaur Jr.
Nice.
Pretty cool. But it was it was great.
I've been talking to
sounds like Taco's technically opened up for Dinosaur Jr.
The Taco Cannon.
The band Taco.
The band Taco, yeah. Taco Cat.
I made a new friend on Twitter, Ian Foles. Do you know him?
No.
From Aquabats. He's a left-handed guitarist. And nice. We have been chit-chatting back and forth about our lefty acquisitions. And we're going to start a lefty guitar network of loaning.
Oh, nice.
We're going to, you know, essentially what will happen is I'll just loan a bunch of stuff to him to record with.
But what are you going
to
do if he chips one of your guitars?
Be okay with it?
How?
What do you mean? The guitars are meant to be played. I'm not like...
Nice.
Okay.
I like that.
You know, it's not like... they're not like museum pieces. Yeah. Although I will say, yesterday, I made a deal to acquire the only left-handed Dave Matthews Martin they made in the year 2000. Which is one of 200. They made one lefty out of the limited run of 264, and it is a guitar I'd been watching on eBay for 3 years. That was priced at $10,000. This guy that I had previously bought a custom shop Strat off of, all of a sudden yesterday it showed up on Reverb, and it was listed at $5,200. And I said, I gotta make this happen. Dory's like, no, you don't have a job. You gotta make fucking not that guitar happen. And I was like, I gotta figure this out. And then I was talking to Lauren Greenberg, who writes for The Late Late Show. She's also a Dave Matthews fan. So I was like going over my Dave Matthews idea of purchasing. And she's like, why don't you just sell one of your other guitars?
Yeah.
And I was like, you're a fucking genius.
You've never
thought
of that.
Didn't even occur to me.
Really?
Didn't even occur to me.
I told you that.
It didn't. Well, to get this guitar, I was like, what am I going to do? This is the one.
One in, two out. You got to do that kind of shit.
Since I was 16 years old, this guitar came out when I was 16, and I'd been playing for like 4 years, and I was like, that's the one. And then, obviously, that one left-handed one. When they released that guitar, it was a waiting list 10 deep for each of the 264 guitars they made. They really underestimated how many Dave Matthews fans there were in the year 2000. Now it seems like it's easier to get one. But it's the only left-handed one. And the guy I bought the custom shop Strat from, I was like, hey, can we work something out? And he's like, yeah, Matt, sure, we can work something
That's out.
That's cool. So yeah, I'm gonna get it. I'm
That's great.
The one. Guys,
what are you giving up?
Gonna dump a couple of Gibson acoustics that I don't really play too much. I got a SJ100 and a J45 that I don't really play very often, and then I think I might also get rid of my 83 Strat two knob. You know that weird model,
yeah,
Kyle?
Real
weird knob. They were trying to save money, so they made two knobs, and you know what? And it's got the shittiest tremolo ever, but it sounds so stratty, and it's 31 years old. I got it because it was a lefty made in 83, and so am I.
Oh.
Anyway, that's
what
I've
been doing.
So
what are you going to do when you get the
guitar? I don't know. I mean, humidify it, obviously, and keep it. Because it was for sale forever for 10 grand. Never sold like that. And then it went away. And then I saw someone sell a righty 2 months ago for 7,000 of this guitar, which when it was new, it was like, what, 3,500? It's crazy. It'll go with my John Mayer Martin, which is one of three, which is valued at $11,000.
Oh my God!
I bought
that new. You're kind of set up for a couple of years if you sell all these guitars.
If I sold them all, it'd be like they're all insured for like, I think I'm insured for like $55,000 for all of them.
Mm.
So, I don't know.
But are they easy to sell, left-handed guitars?
They're easy-ish to sell, but this guitar is like you'd have to find someone who had a bunch of money, which I'm not, and a lefty, and a Dave Matthews fan. So this guitar was really just like, I don't know. I mean, it sat forever. It was the thing it was always in my watch list on eBay, and I was always like, if I ever get a big check, I'm gonna do is get that guitar.
Nice.
But now I got it finally.
Did you actually receive it?
No, not yet. He's gonna hold on to it. I gotta send him some Gibsons.
Oh, you're just straight up trading guitars.
I'm going to do some trade action. Some trade action. Maybe sell one on my own. It's going to be...
That's great.
It's really... I'm very excited about that, guys.
Are you going to open the lefty guitar shop?
I have thought about doing a online lefty situation. There's a couple of people that do it. One guy in Clearwater, Florida, Jerry's Left-Handed Guitars. Essentially, it's Jerry's Left-Handed Guitars Southpaw Guitars in Houston, and this guy, LeftyGuitarsOnly.com. His name is Vic. Check out his guitars. All high-end stuff. Very cool. But there's essentially just three people that do it.
Hmm. Well,
it's interesting.
Is it a sustainable business?
To sell left-handed guitars?
I mean, to basically just recycle? I mean, you're kind of just like, you're taking the finite number of guitars that exist,
yeah,
right? I mean,
yeah.
it's sort of like an antique dealer in
yeah.
a way, right? Like a secondhand store. Are there enough people? I mean, I would imagine most people are probably discouraged from playing guitar left-handed, right?
Yeah, it's disappearing. It's like a disappearing thing because there's a lot of people that will go into like Guitar Center and they'll say, I want to learn guitar, and I'm left-handed, and then the guy at the shop, rightfully so, will be like, don't play left-handed, you'll never be able to play
Or do you anything. Think there's do you think there's a market to emerge for someone saying like, fuck yeah, learn how to play guitar left-handed, here's a bunch of left-handed guitars?
Well, that's been one of my other weird dumb Matt dreams, is I always wanted to start a charitable foundation that would provide left-handed guitars to left-handed guitarists who want to learn how to play, like in inner cities and stuff like that, if they're left-handed. And if they want to learn how to play left-handed, then we'll get them a left-handed guitar, because
mm-hmm.
they're never going to find one otherwise. So I've always wanted to like start that kind of a thing, just to encourage to there to be more of us.
Like an
yeah,
because
I think it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I guess I understand the idea of your life's going to be easier if you just do it this way. But then I also feel like that's discouraging to people, because if you're naturally left-handed, it's more difficult. You have to not only learn how to play an instrument, you have to learn how to play it counterintuitively.
What's interesting too about that Jerry guy in Florida, he played guitar right-handed until he was a contractor and he sliced off one of his fingers.
Oh, shit.
And he wanted to relearn how to play guitar, so he had to relearn left-handed.
Oh, wow.
And then he started going like, well, you can't get... He always wanted to like get these like Duesenbergs, these like... crazy guitars, and he would call them up and be like, can I get a lefty, and then a lot of the guys that own these guitar manufacturers, these luthiers, would be like, I don't know, man, you can get one if you order 12. And then he would just go, okay, I'll order 12.
Oh, fuck.
And then it took him a couple of years before he even decided to sell them. He just sat with a bunch of them in his closet.
Jeez.
And then now he owns this little shop that I've always wanted to go, and I've always wanted to go to Southpaw in Houston. I've bought a couple of things from them, but That's not particularly funny, but just interesting.
No, but I think
to me,
I don't know. To me, it feels like there's a completely underserved market for good guitars for people who are
inclined
to play. It's not like
there is.
It's
absolutely.
Not. I mean, I know lefties are a minority, but yeah. It's not like they're so niche a market that, you know.
Well, it's interesting too. Gibson this year,
you couldn't open the Leftorium.
They're not making any left-handed
at all.
Nope. Because they apparently made a bunch and they're still sitting there. So if anyone wants to buy them, go for it.
Oh, wow.
Like Sam Ash just had a clearance of like 70s tribute Les Pauls, which are like mini humbucker Les Pauls. Anyway, you can get them for like $600-$700. So go for it, kids.
You need to stand up for lefty rights. In fact, we should stop calling them rights. You need to stand up for lefts.
Yeah.
But what about your bill of lefts?
What about right-handed people that identify as left-handed people?
Well, so you're saying they're trans-handed?
Transed.
Trans-Am.
They're trans-Ams.
Trans-American.
So I think that I don't know if you should be able to identify with whatever. You know, and I feel like that's not really our...
Nah, we should stay away.
Dory and I are both left-handed, so we have a 4 in 10 chance of having a left-handed kid, which would be awesome, because I'd be like...
Wow, that's like a...
Play guitar,
it's
buddy.
Like 2 out of 5.
All you got to do is have 10 kids, and four of them you can give your guitars to.
I don't think that's how odds work.
No. Yeah, you 4 and 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
So you have 10 kids and 4 of them will be left-handed.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, I think you're a little off.
Okay, I have 5 kids and 2 of them will be left-handed.
Why do you say 4 out of 10 instead of 2 out of 5?
Is that that's not exactly the same ratio.
It's exactly the same ratio.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it 4 out of 10 or is it 6 out of 10? What is the...
Well, you just said 4 out of 10, so that's
I know,
what I'm basing my thing
out
off
of 10.
Of.
But you take the common denominator being 2, and then you have...
Yeah, so
you take 2 down from each of those and you get 2/5.
Yeah. Well, then why do they say that? That's the statistic I've always read, though. That's so interesting.
It's typical left-handed propaganda.
Yeah.
Who do you think's trying to push the metric system? Left-handed people.
Yeah. Like Canada.
Yeah.
The left hand of North America.
Do you remember that SNL sketch, Amerida? Could it happen?
Yes.
Yeah. It was like, it's like America's economy becomes so weak that Canada just drops the border and takes over. And so they become one country known as Amerida. And it's like there's like a dad still struggling with the transition. And like it's like he's like, you're not still seeing that Peterson boy, are you? He's like, it's like, yes, Dad, we've already talked about it. You don't use that word in this house. I wouldn't touch that boy with a 10-foot pole. Don't you mean a 10-meter pole? Don't you use that. I think it was Phil Hartman.
It is kind of funny, though, too, that you – I do appreciate that you drifted into something that's current in the news.
Yeah.
Because the – I watched the
Canada being the current.
No, Rachel Dolezal. Because I watched
her hair's on fleek, guys.
I watched the Today Show interview today, thinking like, oh well, finally she's going to speak out. We're going to get some answers. And it just felt like she said a lot of words without saying exact. Like I almost
like a Bill Cosby interview.
No,
just
no.
Words.
No. She said a lot of very articulate things about the situation in a roundabout way, but she would say like, well, it's a very complex issue, but she didn't say why it was a complex issue. And Matt Lauer asked her all the questions that everyone has, like, well, if you willfully deceived people because you didn't correct? And she was like, well, I take issue with that word, but you know, I identify as this and I'm not, and but didn't really say why. And so I think where I landed with, I think it's one of the most fascinating social issues, because I feel like it is an air show disaster of political correctness. Because you don't know where you're like, okay, it's wrong that she lied, and you really you shouldn't pretend to be another race. But then if she identifies as that race, am I compromising her? Am I marginalizing her feelings as a human because I'm saying she can't have that experience? Like,
I think it's a bad thing that's happening for the transgender community of like, you know, they say I identify as a woman or I identify as a man. And I think this is going to kind of like – it's going to be a sticking point for a lot of conservative people.
I don't think anyone's going to use that against the transgender
community. Oh, it'll be
I think they've tried.
I think they've tried,
but I think in general – you know, I think people.
Yeah, I just when I heard about it, I immediately got scared for the transgender movement.
No. I don't think that's going to be
okay.
I don't see that as. I think anyone trying to attack the transgender community.
Fox News will be glad to do that.
Yeah, but it was just like the whole thing. Have. It's like it's you know like because it's like it's less ridiculous than some saying to like if a man can marry a man, why not a box turtle? Like that whole thing. It's like you know if I can identify as this, I can identify as Superman. You know,
right?
It's I just worry about it as you being used.
But
as
I think the people that would say that are the same people that would make like a box turtle analogy, and then people would be like, "Yeah, shut up," you know?
Yeah.
Like,
That's true, I
just don't think – I mean I think where I landed on it was, you know what? If you're Caucasian, you don't really get to judge it because it's not – you don't – we don't have the point of view that allows us to say whether or not it's right or wrong. I think we can say like, well, you shouldn't lie. You shouldn't lie at your job and deceive people. You know, you shouldn't willingly deceive people.
Yeah.
But I don't think we can say whether it's morally right or wrong because it's not it's not our family, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like white people trying to say, oh, well, it's wrong. It's like, well, I'm not black. I can't say if I think it's okay or not because it's not infringing upon my family.
Maybe she just overdosed on some tanning pills.
You're just describing the plot of Soul Man.
Maybe. Yeah.
Which I still can't believe ever got made.
Yeah.
I watched a trailer of Soul Man recently, and the whole time I was like, no.
Yeah.
Because there's even a line in the trailer where he's in full body blackface going, it's the 80s, man. It's the Cosby decade. I'm like, everything we know about the 80s and Cosby now makes us 10 times worse. I mean, it's so bad.
Cosby decade?
That's a fucking line?
Yeah. That's a line from the movie. Because that's part of his justification to his friend. He was like, everyone love, it's the 80s, man. Yeah. It's the Cosby decade.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. So, I don't know, but it's going to be really interesting to see. I think a lot of people are genuinely like, I don't know. I don't know if I don't know.
You're like the androids in that episode of Star Trek called iMUD, where they're on the planet and they just try to confuse them with logic. Remember that, guys? Listen to me very carefully. Everything I say is a lie. And then Spock says, I'm lying. And then They get real
paradox,
confused.
and then they yeah.
Oh boy, what a treat that
That's
episode is.
That's how he tricks them.
It's a real fun episode.
Well, he was very smart.
It's a lot of fun down there on the planet.
What are you up to this weekend?
This weekend?
Yeah.
Just some boring house stuff, like taking out the shelf that
That's
the
awesome.
People put in before, and then also this countertop thing that they put in the basement. We're going to remove that, and I'm going to also build some stuff near the deck.
You're doing some sledgehammer like, demo?
Some stuff?
Yeah, like this, like, it's a, you know, like, I want to put some lattice for privacy near our deck, and I'm going to get some lattice and 2x4s and build it. Just dump.
Are you going to drop the pylons long enough? Are you going to put cement down, or what are you going
to
do?
What?
I'm going to hammer it into Matt. You know he likes to build things. Yeah. So if you start saying, like, I'm going to put up lattice, Matt's going to come over with some overalls and be like, let's.
I'll fucking be there in a second, bro.
No, I'm going to put it like, you know the seating area.
What do you
need? Seating area by in the deck area. I'm going to, like.
Oh, okay. Go from that.
Put it over there.
Cool. That's already anchored enough. He's fine. Guys, he's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. I'm going to go see a band called Headwound City on Friday. Mm-hmm. Very much looking forward to that. Members of Yeah's, Locust, and the Blood Brothers. Very much looking forward to that. Yeah. Good little super group there.
Super group.
Yeah. Oh, I still got to watch Spring. I got a lot of movies to catch up on. I got to watch Spy. I got to watch Spring that you told me about.
Yep. Spring is really
great. I haven't seen Jurassic World yet.
I haven't seen Jurassic World yet. I might have to watch What We Do in the Shadows again for the third time.
Still on top of the iTunes horror.
It's so good.
I hope they're making a shit ton of money off that.
Me too.
I mean, like, just because it took them so long to make it and finally get it put out that it just feels like.
Taika Waititi's other movie, Boy, is so great too. Did we talk about that?
Yeah. No.
It's like it's a movie he made kind of based off of his.
Were you here
childhood.
When they did the podcast?
What?
Were you no, here they when were they here. Did the podcast?
No, no, no. I was in editing. Mm. But like, yeah, it's a really awesome movie. It's crazy because it's like, you know, based on Taika's life, like on the eastern side of New Zealand, which is very Polynesian, and so like watching it like reminded me a lot of home. Just because it was like a lot of Polynesian people, a lot of, like the music was very, you know, it was like beaches and stuff like that. So it was kind of a nice watch. I related to it more than I should have.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's a movie that I started watching, but I started it too late at night and I had to go to sleep. But it's called We Are Still Here.
You know what? I saw the trailer for
it. Like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. And the first 15 minutes of what I saw were fucking great. It's like a weird period horror.
No, I can't wait.
Movie.
It's funny because I had some friends over on Friday and we were like looking through trailers of stuff to rent on iTunes, and everyone was up on Eli Ross Presents The Stranger. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, we've been hearing about it. It just came out today. We should watch it. And I was like, I don't know. We Are Still Here. Like, that looks awesome. That looks great. And you didn't like it.
No, I liked a lot the acting. So I saw it last Friday. The acting is horrible consistently through it, but the scare sequences are some of the best I've ever seen shot. Like, it's incredibly well made in every factor except for the horribly stilted acting.
We Are Still Here?
Yeah. But so really scary, but it bounces back and forth like metronomically almost between terrible acting scenes, and then your reward is great.
But I sort of read that as like, because it's kind of a period piece.
You have not had the friends show up yet. There's,
but it's in the trailer. It's like, yeah, it's in the town.
It yes.
So no one told me that I died a year ago.
The same way in like, it feels sort of in the same vein as like those William Castle movies that are super well shot, but it's definitely people from like a local theater troupe acting in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the more people in the scenes, the more dialogue that has to happen, and the more you're like, let's get spooky again, guys. Remember when we went in the basement? That was a real fun time.
Let's get spooky again.
Sounds like
it's totally worth the watch. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, did you watch the Steve Martin induction into the AFI yet?
No, I read some of the highlights of the jokes. Yeah. But I didn't watch it.
Well, you got it then.
Yeah.
It's good. Very, you know, part of the challenge is streaming things on the road.
Yeah.
It gets very frustrating to try to, because you can't stream any video on a plane.
Yeah.
And then I've been in a bunch of hotels lately that have particularly bad, where I start watching something and it just stops and I gotta wait and I gotta start.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I'll, you know, like I'll try to, I'll leave and come back and then I'll try to watch something, but it'll have timed out.
Oh.
So it'll have loaded, but then it's gotta start over again.
Shit.
So I don't,
You
know, it's just a really horrible
real
problem.
Hard time. Really hard, real relatable, really hard work. Wish I had a sling
box. You know
box.
What? Everyone can relate to that.
Yeah, very true.
Everyone can relate to slow internet.
It was very good. One of my favorite lines, though, was...
was the look on your face doing the voice.
Real relatable, hard work.
Try again. Oh, look, he has a car that works now. Bet it starts. I bet it starts. Typical picking up friend's coffee. Real relatable, Hardwick.
What was the line from a movie?
Which one?
You said there was a line from something you were going to quote.
Oh, from the thing that you noticed the bit petered out? Thank you for setting me up. Yeah.
Back.
Amy Poehler, when she comes out, like, she's like, "Hi, everybody. I'm women in comedies, Amy Poehler."
I the line that cracked me up was Martin Short's line about the secret to a long career in comedy is looking 70 when you're 30.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just picturing him saying it.
Yeah, he was you know, his speeches are always the best. He also Tina Fey had a really good one where she's like, you know, talking about how much she loved Steve Martin, and she's all, "And the feelings I had when you married a woman that is a smarter, prettier, skinny version of me." And like the sound the crowd made was just like everyone going, "Oh, I just realized that."
And how was Steve?
He was great. Yeah, like he had some great lines. It's like, you know, Lorne Michaels, "If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. Thanks for the ride." Yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, but Martin Short, like the best. And Mel Brooks was pretty good. Yeah, but like I think Martin Short, he's always the best. Martin Short, he should host everything.
He's so effortlessly funny. Like there's just no sense that he's ever trying to be funny. He's just effortlessly funny.
Yeah, Queen Latifah came out and said some sweet words, and then like had a guy come out with a guitar and sang the song from The Jerk. I know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but you know, she doesn't have the best, and like she started like she's kind of like wasn't hitting the notes, and I was kind of like, ugh. But then as she pushed forward, I was like, no, this is like a sweet thing.
Yeah.
She's not a singer. She's a rapper and an actress, but she still did this
talk
thing. Talk show host. Yeah, but it was really
queen.
Cool. A queen. Yeah.
She's
that's where we got our last
monarch.
Hit writer.
Yeah. But she was that was really nice. And then Jack Black started the thing with a called like the anthem, and he just did a very like big version of Picking Out a Thermos for You.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was great. That was good. Good TV. I watched Bourdain's Hawaii episode was pretty great.
Yeah, I gotta start getting into stuff because I am like fucking my DVR is caught up.
Oh, well, no.
You should be very happy Taffer's coming on the podcast soon.
I'm very much looking forward to that.
You're gonna be here for that, of course.
Of course, it prevented me from going to New York. It was like this guy can only come when Matt's here. I was like, I get it, John Taffer. I'll
Having
be there
done
for
an
you.
Episode of Bar Rescue, you
yeah,
have to be on.
I think we should have Jordan sit in too.
If he wants
Jordan's
to, he can.
Jordan's a huge, also a huge Bar Rescue fan, and he did Recon with me.
All right.
I think it'll be super fun.
Yeah. What are you up to? You going anywhere this week?
This is the first weekend that I don't have to be somewhere. I don't have to be anywhere until Comic-Con on the weekends.
Nice.
Which is having traveled every weekend for the last several months.
Yeah.
For a long time.
At least some of those were actual trips, though.
Could I crash in your hotel room at Comic-Con?
One was a trip. yeah, Lydia won't mind at all. Just
I'm sure she can buy a hotel next
just
door.
Crawl in between them.
See, don't crumble. Just take the joke and tag
doing?
It and move on.
What is wrong with you? Why do you just fall apart? What's in bad? You're not
nothing
to be embarrassed about.
Just don't make the joke and move on. Come on.
Way to go.
It makes it worse that you just...
Yes, her family owns many property.
Uh-huh. There you
many
go. Many property.
Never mind. I take it back. No. I was wrong.
Think she knows someone that could get me a hotel room?
Yes, her family is very wealthy.
No, Chris. Now it seems more boastful than it is.
What are you
funny.
Talking about?
Yeah, no. Just like you, just like do it. Say just own it. Try it again, Matt. Do another rich joke.
So when you get there, are you taking the super secret billionaires road?
They own Vogue.
See, once again,
what?
It's like that had. Literally nothing to do with. He was talking about like a transport. You go yes, and then you like you can riff on like it's like oh
here,
well, that
me,
stopped up. So we're taking the transporter that they. I've said too much. Something like that. Similar. So like
I'll give
one
you
more time.
One.
You just
I'll
said
give
Vogue.
I'll give you another one.
All right,
okay. Went to Whole Foods the other night and realized that the beef was super expensive. And I was like, where'd this come from? Of course, it came from Hearst Ranch.
billions.
That was perfect.
I'm just glad you found someone you're going to have to sign a prenup for.
I know. And I keep having this fantasy that she'll be like, oh, do you want me to sign one for you too?
That's
a favor. You have performer's money.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
She is still pretty good to do that prank that I came up with a long time ago.
Which one?
The one where it's like, you pick up checks for a while and then finally she picks up a check, but then you secretly go and tell the waiter to return it saying, sorry, your card's been declined.
She pays cash for everything.
Really? Did she run out of bouillons?
She's smart. Can't track it. Those industry magnates, they know what's up. They know where to be.
Should I leave 25% extra gold?
I'm trying to figure out the tip. Could you bring me a scale?
The breakfast bill was $24.97. How much is that in emeralds?
You know what? Keep the pebbles.
I think this is an original Da Vinci drawing. I don't know where this came from.
Him.
Oh, this old thing. The original Leo great-grandfather called him.
Great-grandfather was a time traveler. I don't know if you're aware.
Well, Hearst Castle's on a rift. It's on a space-time rift. So
that's good, too. Not like that.
There you go.
Anyhow.
Any hoozle.
Let's call this episode Relatable. The end?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think we have enough time.
Katie has a heart out. Yeah, we
do. Great. Katie.
Is it just because you want to leave?
No,
I
just
want to leave.
Oh.
All hands on deck.
Drop the axe on you.
You're going to take my job?
Welcome to Midnight. I'm Katie Levine.
What are you typing all the time?
I'm trying to spell relatable.
That's very relatable.
Yeah, because our listeners are dumb, Chris. Jesus Christ.
You really do not get this.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I don't understand.
Hang in there. I'm sure your hairdresser will fix everything.
Sean. Oh, no one said it yet.
What? What are we saying?
Enjoy your burrito.
Don't try to take my job!
Enjoy your cannon-fired taco.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.